Okay, thanks everybody for attending today, and of course, I always say for listening to me in English. Of course, you guys speak better English than I do. I'm an American, and we just speak one language really poorly, and we usually sort of bastardize it. So I'm very happy to be here. There's actually a lot of my favorite people in this room, so that some of those guys that were mentioned, really happy to be here with them. So my name is Doug Brown. I've been actually doing this remoting type of technology since about 96, 97. And I still believe that it's the coolest idea that was ever invented. But today I want to talk about completely different things. So I actually put together this session. How many of you guys were at the Sepago Forum? Was there any duplicates? Okay, well, I apologize because we're going to do the same thing. But I asked, and they said, no, please do it. So I actually put this session together for Norwegian Users Group in end of last year, and they liked it a lot. And then Helge and Tim asked me if I wanted to come here and if I had anything fun to talk about. So this is what I'm going to talk about, and I'm not going to tell you about it. I'm going to get into it. So things I'm not going to talk about today, I'm not going to talk about things that other speakers are going to talk about, you know, which is probably a good thing. Unless, of course, you've heard me before, and then you're like, well, I've heard this before. I'm not going to talk about how to configure things. There's no next, there's no screenshots. There's some images, some cool pictures, but no next, screenshots. What I want to talk about today is more of a possibility type of conversation, more about the future, or really what's happening today. And the future is definitely different than what we live in today. And today is definitely different than, you know, what it was in 96 or even 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Things are changing at a pace that we can't imagine. And new technologies and new ideologies are coming in, not just in how Windows or Apple or, you know, the big boys out there are doing things, but in how everybody, all these little startups in a garage are building things that are affecting, you know, our everyday lives. And it's always those two guys in the garage that disrupt everything. You know, we have Nutanix here, and talk about, you know, coming out of nowhere and just completely disrupting the data center. Who would have thought that, right? So, so what I do want to talk about today is three things. So just three simple little things that are really changing and transforming our world in ways that we can't imagine, right? And, of course, again, we've seen some of this already, but it's only going to continue to amplify. So everyone in this room eats and breathes IT, right? Who loves IT? We all love IT. That's why we're here, right? That's why we came maybe for the coffee, but probably not for my pretty face. So, but everyone in this room loves IT. We tend to think about the technology. Who in here would say they're addicted to their phones? Who wakes up in the morning, the first thing they do is look at their telephone? You know, we all do, right? Everyone in here, your Surface or your iPad or whatever, right? But are you really, you know, what you're addicted to is actually the information, you know? You're not physically addicted to the phone. It's impossible to be physically addicted. It's sort of like saying I'm addicted to the TV, but yet you go to a different, you know, friend's house and you're just as happy with their TV as you were with your TV. So you're not addicted to the device. You're addicted to the information, right? But we all think technology, right? We all think, okay, well, it's all about, you know, this new widget that just came out, or this new fancy idea, or this great software version, right? But it's not. It's what we're here for, what IT is about, is not technology. It's about the I. It's about the information, right? So that brings me to the first thing I want to talk about, which is big data. Which big data is all about, what? Information, right? So the winners of this is sort of, I mean, it's almost like one of those, yeah, I know this, right? Everyone knows this. The winners of the 21st century, the winners of the 20th century were those who understood their customers best, right? We understand this. But the difference between the 20th century and the 21st century is really big, or is quite different, and that is big data. And big data is now available to all of us, right? So let me give you an example. I have two little kids, and they're girls, and they absolutely love these things called American Girl dolls. And I don't know if you have, you know, German Girl dolls or something, but they're these little dolls. They cost way too much money, and then you have to buy all these accessories for them, and it's just, it's the biggest racket you've ever seen, right? And it's a, they're a big, giant company, a very successful company, and I have, of course, a mother and a father, which is my kid's grandmother and grandfather, and one day I get a call from my mom and says, hey, did you send me a catalog, American Girl Dog catalog? And I was like, no, I don't know. So my dad, like a week later, did you send me an American Girl Dog catalog? They, American Girl, had managed to figure out that these two little girls that go into some American Girl Doll store, register for something because they think they're going to win something, right? Now American Girl had figured out that their parents are me, and my parents are these guys, and they know that who buys the most junk for little kids, their grandparents, right? So they mailed them catalogs. And now those, my parents, their grandparents, went out and bought a bunch of stuff through this catalog and sent it to the kids. You know, how bright and intelligent is that, you know? But in the past, how did that happen? And how did American Girl Doll do that? They did it by actually buying the data from big credit companies, you know, like Expedia, you know? I don't know what it is in Germany or if it's the same, but, you know, you have these credit companies that understand every single thing about you, you know, definitely about what you purchased. For a company to buy that information costs a lot of money. You know, so the big guys could always do this. They could afford to buy the data. But now with big data being accessible to everybody, in fact, you can even download cool little apps for your Surface and your iPad. It will do visualization of just tons of disparate data in real time and present it to you. You know, it's all there, right? So no longer can only American Girl Dolls and the big giant corporations rule the world. Anybody can now rule the 21st century, which is really cool. So this applies to you guys too, right? Everybody has a customer. Many years ago, I wrote a book, and the whole premise, the book sort of got a little bit crazy. It ended up 900 and some pages. But the whole premise was to write a little white paper trying to teach people that, hey, you got a customer and you need to take care of these guys, right? We're consultants, and consultants go out and we understand our customer, be that, you know, be that my client, but really the end user. And we all have end users, but yet we all have bosses too. Our bosses are customer also. I'm sort of getting on a little bit sidetrack there, but I'm really good at digression, so please be weary. And I've never yet completed this PowerPoint successfully, too, or at least all the way through, so we'll see if I'm able to do that today. I get a little bit off. But anyway, so we all have bosses, so we always have to understand the data, right? Understand so that we can please our boss, we can please our customer, or maybe the guy buying our widgets on Amazon.com, whatever. You know, we have many different 360 degrees around of people we need to understand. And the more information we have about them, about their wishes, their likes, their uses, patterns, what have you, the better we're at, right? So information itself means nothing. You know, I have logs of, I run a website, www.dabcc.com. It's actually 17 years old, and I have every log, minus, I think, the first year of every visit of everything. And I printed it all off a few years ago, or last year, and it was like this thick. And it was so cool to look at, but it meant absolutely nothing to me. Information by itself is completely useless. We have to understand it. So what is big data? So Wikipedia defines, and I have to read this because it's quite long, extremely large data sets that may be analyzed conceptually to reveal patterns, trends, and associations. So what does this mean? Just a lot of data? Well, yes, but. So, and I actually cut a few slides out, so I'm going to skip more boring stuff. So you've seen the three Vs. But let's get into why big data. So we all understand that, okay, there's a lot of information out there. We're collecting a lot of information. As I move through this, I'll talk about some of the things that are in reasons why we're collecting all this information out. Every single thing is collecting information. And as we move into, every single thing, my watch is collecting information about me right now. And it's sharing it with my health insurance company so I can get reduced rates, right? Which is sharing it with the government. And they're all, you know, patterning me and what have you. So we need to understand big data. We need to understand the data around us, right? The better we understand it, the more we can glean from it. So let me give you an example. I like my examples and I like my stories. So, who here has heard the fact that Americans love apple pie? Everybody's heard this. American loves apple pie, right? So a few years ago, or 10 years ago, I don't know, a while ago in a land far away, some people put on a test. They wanted to see if this was actually true. So what they did is they went to a supermarket, and they emptied the shelves where all the apple pies were, or all the pies were. And actually, they didn't. The first time, they left it the way it was, and they were, you know, big, normal-sized pies. And they calculated how many were sold every single, you know, for 1 week. And what they found at the end of the week was, yes, apple pie was the number one selling pie there was. Okay? So, yes, they thought, okay, Americans love apple pies. It's true. We proved it. And they said, well, next week, let's go, and instead of having a normal-sized pie, let's have a little personal pie. So they took all the pies out of the freezer, and they put in small little personal pies, okay? And then they watched, and they tabulated and calculated, what have you, counted how many pies were sold. And what they found was, well, what do you think they found? The people know that we're here. So somebody, yeah. They found that number one pie was not apple pie. It was actually, I think, cherry pie. Why? And what did they realize? They realized that apple pie was everyone's second favorite pie. So, or maybe not everyone's second favorite pie, but on average it was everyone's second favorite pie. So when you got together as a group, you could all agree, let's buy apple pie, right? But when you had the choice, you know, they got to buy a bunch of different pies. And so they found out that, you know, apple pie was not. So they myth-busted that Americans love apple pie. Why? Because they had more data and they were able to understand the context of things, right? Get into it. And we have to understand context. Context is the most important. Like I said, data itself doesn't really help us. As we get into the context of the data, as we understand what the data means, as we get more data to start diving into it, then we can start understanding things a lot better, right? Search is context to the core. Search is really interesting. Has anyone ever really dove into how search engines work beyond SEO type of things? It's really interesting. I really got into this about 10 years ago, and I started doing iTunes U courses on search through CU Berkeley and MIT and all these places that I'm not smart enough to go to, but I can get online, you know? So I started watching all this, and there was this great talk by the guy at Google that was responsible for understanding what people want when they search for things. And he said, Jaguar. Let's say someone puts in the word Jaguar in search. How do you know what they want? Do they want the cat? Do they want the car? Do they want the old Apple OS from 10 years ago that probably sucks? You know, what do they want? You know? They have to, well, as you start adding more information to it, oh, they're in New York City. Yeah, they probably want the car. They're in Brazil, in the Amazon, and they've been searching jungle trips. Yeah, they probably want the cat, you know, to make sure, you know, they don't get eaten, right? So the more information we have, the better we are. Rise, and also what big data gives us is really the rise of machine learning. And machine learning is cool. I'm actually reading I must admit I stopped. I told you this great book called The Master Algorithm, which the math guy lost me in the math, I must confess. And where the quest for one algorithm to understand everything, imagine that. We'll get there at some point. Some guy will figure it out. It won't be me because I gave up on the book. But machine learning is here today, and we're seeing it already. There's tons of solutions, and now with the rise of the cloud, we're able to have more and more data, and these companies are collecting more and more data, and then they're able to look and say, oh, well, this company over here has already seen this problem. We can help this company over here that's about to do this, right? So let me give you some story time again about machine data or machine learning. So where did machine learning come from? Well, it came from IBM. Everything originally came from IBM in some way or another, right? You know, big blue, baby. So back in, I wanted to say the 1940s, 1950s, there was a guy, Arthur Samuel, who worked for IBM, and he was tasked with trying to make this machine learn. How many of you seen War Games? The old famous, you know, geek movie War Games. We all love War Games, right? It's like the best movie ever. I have it on my computer. Well, my computer. So I carry it with me places, just in case I need to get a little global thermonuclear war on. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. So, but in the movie, they teach the computer how to play what? Checkers, right? Or tic-tac-toe in the movie. But Arthur Samuel taught his computer how to play checkers. And checkers is a pretty simple game. So he taught the computer, okay, here's, you know, you can go here and you can jump this way. And if a person's, or if another chip is here, you can't go here and what have you. He taught it the basic moves of the game, you know, and then he played it. And he destroyed the computer. You know, I mean, he won so big. And then he played it again and he destroyed the computer, played it again and destroyed the computer. And he's like, well, this is useless. So he thought to himself, well, what can I do? So then he told the computer, he wrote a little side routine that said, okay, if he's here, well, remember what the moves were, and you'll know that you can't go here because of, so he wrote this little routine in there, and he played it again, and he still beat the computer. But he didn't beat it as bad as he did the first time. So he's like, okay, I think I'm on to something, because the computer's starting to learn more information. It starts knowing that if I have done this, not to do it again. What did Einstein say? That the level of being an idiot is doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different results. But we all do it. It's called rebooting, you know, right? It didn't work. Well, let's reboot. Well, it didn't work. Let's reboot again, you know? So I do it all the time. So anyway, so he did it, and then he said, well, what I'll do is I'll actually let the computer play itself. So he literally, just like in the movie, he let the computer play itself. And he came back like a month later, and he played the computer, and the computer won, and won really, really big. And the reason he had won, because it understood that, hey, if I go here and he goes here, the chances, the probability is that, you know, I'm going to get jumped, I'm going to lose my king here or what have you. Right, so the more information we have, the more, you know, the better we are. This is all obvious stuff, but what can I say? So what does this mean for IT? It means everything, right? IT is a reflection of our workforce. The consumerization of IT is something we can't avoid. I come from the time when you could tell the users what to do. What a great time that was, you know. No, you will get this laptop. No, you will not move that icon. No, I will tell you what to do. You remember those days? Remember how great those days were? Those days are long gone, right? Nowadays, the users tell us what to do. And even what's even worse is the C-level people tell us what to do. They come in and they say, well, we want this stupid little pad thing that we want. And, well, you don't need this pad. We want this stupid little watch thing. And they all get connected, right? And that causes us a bunch of grief. So the more we know, you know, the better we are. It also gives us operational efficiency. It gives us machine learning, big data. And it gives us, and it has the ability to give us a better user experience. And we're seeing that again with, there's a company, there's tons of them out there. There's a company that comes to mind, Cloud Physics, that is just a typical performance monitoring solution. And yet another performance monitoring solution, right? That's the most boring industry. It's almost like storage used to be. Where it's just like, oh gosh, I can deal with another hard drive spinning at 10,000 RPMs, you know, great. But now, because the people are hosting these things, they're able to see again what everyone else in their environments are doing, or, you know, within the environment of the hosting company, right, or of the solution provider, and then share that with everybody, right? So as we see anomalies, I can't spit it out, it's early. So popping up in our environments, we're able to say, hey, we think this is going to happen. And big data provides all that. And we might just see a rush to update legacy applications. One thing I've learned in my years of IT is nothing ever dies. I love when people say, oh, everything's going to converge. No, it's not. It's never going to happen. We don't, you know, they said the TV would kill the radio. It didn't. We have AM, FM, satellite, internet. I mean, everybody, you know, there's so many, nothing ever dies. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and more and more and more and more. But, and then we have all these legacy applications, right? But I think because of the drive to understand our customers better, we're going to start seeing some of these legacy applications actually be updated. Why? Because they're not collecting data. They're not storing that data. And we want to get as much data as possible. So any type of application that can collect data, that's not, we should upgrade, and then in return. So one thing you can think about too is, you know, what in our environment, what in our, can we collect, what kind of data can we collect to better help us, to give us better operational efficiency, right? So that we can understand our users better or understand our boss better. So that when he asks for this report, I'm like, I already got that for you. It's already in your inbox, man. Where have you been? And of course, we have to understand the data too. So I think if I can figure out this computer. So it's a short little video for you. So just visualization. This is taking a bunch of logs, throwing into a visualizer. It says here's one system that's communicating with another system that's communicating with another system and that's communicating with another system. And we're able to start seeing as this video plays out all the connections between all these different endpoints, right? And when we look at this, we're able to see some neat stuff. We're able to see, you know, hot spots, you know, where there's contention or you know, what have you, right? And you can see a lot of, a lot of human can see a lot of really neat stuff in this. And it's quite interesting. So, you know, understanding and visualization is extremely important. That's just a short little video. Now, there's a dark side. Everything has a yin and a yang, right? There's a positive to every negative, right? So, and of course, big data is as scary as they come. Edward Snowden, everyone knows Snowden, has showed us what's really happening, what our governments, what the American government is doing with big data, and it's not a very nice thing, right? You know, in 2020, 80%, I read that 80% of corporate crime is actually going to be related to big data, where they're still stealing information. You know, there's been people fired at Facebook. I love this one. They've been fired at Facebook for using the Facebook big data to find the really pretty girls and try to date them. So seems sort of cool in my book. I thought it was, you know, I'd hire those people, right? So, but, you know, we have to be careful there because the more information we know, we can also use it to blackmail them. We can use it to, you know, what somebody, you know, one, a friend of mine might not be a friend of yours. A friend of mine not be my friend in the future, you know. Data retention. This is interesting. I love the EU and I love Germany because Germany understands privacy. You know, I wish everyone in every country in the world understood privacy the way the Germans do. But a few years ago, EU passed a law that required all telcos to save data for 6 to 2 years, right? But Germany, in your constitution, you have the right to your own data, which is a phenomenal idea. Gee, you have the right to your own stuff. Snowden showed us what the government was doing with this data. In Germany, they had protests all over calling it the Stasi 2.0. That's not a good thing. I don't want to be called Stasi 2.0, right? Although I do name my Wi-Fi or my MiFi Stasi. So when I'm walking around in East Berlin, because I spend most of my time in East Berlin nowadays, or the east side of Berlin, people are like, ooh, I don't want to hack into this MiFi. We'll stay away from those guys, which is not nice, right? And with great responsibility comes great, with great power comes great responsibility. So let me give you another little story. So like I said, in Germany, you guys have the right to your own data. So this telco deal, a guy in Berlin actually sued the EU and said, you cannot have my data, and sued the telcos. And it took like a year or so, but he managed to win. So one day, the mail, the postal people came and they gave him a CD. Loaded up the CD. It was just data, just flying by. It was really quite interesting. I saw a video of all this data flying by. So he threw it into his handy dandy little visualizer on his PC. And what did he get? He got that video. That video is not a server to server communication. It's the guy's phone traffic. It's the phone calls he's made. Right? So now if you go back to that video and you look at the hotspots, imagine if a government looked at that information and said, oh, okay, yeah, here's the guy that's communicating with this guy, here's the hotspots. We'll just go after these people, we'll shut down this network, right? So they can control thought, control groups, control ideas. That's obviously not what we want in any world, any time. So big data has a negative, and we as IT people, we need to understand this because we're the sort of the gatekeepers of that data, right? And so we need to be mindful of our fellow man. So what is driving all this data? Well, Moore's Law. You know, Moore's Law is one of the greatest laws ever thought of, right? It's not, he didn't make the law, he just realized the law. And that is that, what, every year transistors get smaller, and so in return we can put more on a wafer and things get faster, right? Something like that. So Moore's Law is quite Gordon Moore, the founder of Intel. So in what we saw is things kept getting faster and faster and faster and faster and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Although I have a law called Doug's Law, which is Andy giveth and Bill taketh away. And Andy is the founder of Intel, or one of the founders, Andy Grove, and Bill being Bill Gates, right? So Andy gives us faster CPUs, and Windows gives us more and more graphics, and things are always relative, right? Andy giveth and Bill taketh away. It's always the same. But anyway, the rise of Moore's Law has actually made transistors and sensors a lot more affordable. So we saw in the early days, in the 90s, things were extremely expensive for the sensors, average price of a sensor, and storage costs too, now with the cloud storage. And all that dropped in about the early 2000s, then the engineers and designers went to work. And when they went to work, then they started building some neat stuff, right? And at first, the big companies did it. Oil companies are taking little sensors and they're throwing in the bottom of oil wells. I don't think they actually toss them down there, but you know, they use a device and they put them down, and they're finding more oil in the oil well than they thought there was there, and in return they're not drilling more oil, so we're getting cheaper oil and we're getting more oil, right? Which is obviously a good thing, because every single thing around you is made from petroleum some way or another. So that being said, the other big thing that's driving this big data revolution is the Internet of Things, right? And what is the Internet of Things? That is one of the most interesting questions. I actually had a conversation with I'm a Citrix CTP, and one of my CTP buddies I've known for a long time, and I were talking about the IoT, and we really love this. It's so cool, right? You know, connecting the unconnected. And he said, well, there's no killer app for this thing yet. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself, actually. So there's no killer app. And I was like, well, what is the Internet of Things? Let's first define what the Internet of Things is, because everyone hears it, but yet does anyone have a decent a definition? Let's see. Anyone have a definition of what the Internet of Things is? Anybody? Nobody? Nobody. Give me one. No, you don't. Okay. I call the Internet of Things, it's commonly called as machine-to-machine communications, right? Devices are connecting and they're communicating with each other. I have a better word for it, and that's connecting the unconnected with intelligence, right? We're able to now take our watches and connect them to our phones and connect them to our computers and connect them to the cloud and connect them to everything, right? We're connecting things that were never connected before. We're giving them intelligence. We're getting data off that information, and we're learning from it, and we're making our lives better, right? We're connecting the unconnected. So we get back into this conversation with my buddy from the CTP group, who's saying, well, there's no killer app. I was like, well, I don't think there can be a killer app for it. He said, well, what do you mean? There has to be a killer app for it. I was like, the Internet of Things is not a thing. It's sort of, or it's not a, it's not like a highway, or it's not a device, it's not a computer system, it's not an app. It's more of like an idea. It's connecting the unconnected. That's not really, maybe there's a great solution that comes along someday, and people are like, oh, that's the greatest IoT device ever, but it won't make people go buy more IoT. Everything you buy will be IoT'd. But think about this question as I go through there. Is there a killer app as I go through and talk more about the Internet of Things? And again, I'm going to talk about IoT in a different way than you usually think about it. So it's truly a good question. It's something to think about. So we've all heard about the connected office, right? Citrix talks about this quite heavily. Connecting your office, making everything, connected in some way so that, I'll get into it. So to be fair, IoT does not rank highly within corporations' requirements, agendas nowadays, but it will be. Why? Because of the operational efficiency, right? And because of consumerization of IT. IDC estimates $8.9 trillion in IoT by 2020, 212 billion connected devices. Everything is being connected. Cisco, I love this. Cisco controls all their buildings from four locations nowadays through their IoT fabric and their infrastructure. They foresee a day, and I love this quote. They foresee a day, let me read it so I make sure I get it. Executives driving into a garage will automatically signal the elevator to come and pick them up and turn on the lights in her office. There's two things problem with this statement. One, do they not care about the normal employees? Is it only for executives? And two, her. Is it they? Are they sexist? You know, I mean, is it him and her? So I foresee a day when you drive into your office, get close, and Citrix is going in this direction in a way. Well, we all are, really, where you get close to the office, it realizes that you're getting close to your office with proximity. It turns on, maybe it powers up more servers, right? It turns on your lights, it sends the elevator down, you know, do all this neat stuff, so it's ready for you. And you say, well, IoT is not one of the big things for us, and it's not coming into our environment. Yes, it is. Believe it or not, it is. And how is it making its way into the enterprise or to small companies today? Light bulbs. What's light bulbs? Who buy? I mean, what? But they are. They're like the Philips Hue light bulbs, which I'm addicted to, and I've spent way too much money on these light bulbs. But in the past, the light bulbs were managed through facilities, right? Or, you know, through the janitor people that came in and replaced light bulbs. Yeah, I mean, they may still do it, but they're connected, right? So, I thought I had another bullet on that, but I guess I removed it. I'll just talk about it. So, where am I? I'm way ahead in my talking, I think. What does the management decide? Yeah. So what if management decides to put in these light bulbs? Or they're just happening, right? When you put in a light bulb has a, needs to be managed. It has an IP address. It connects to the, into your intranet. Maybe it connects to the internet, right? Consider all the IP addresses that's going to be added as you, you know, I mean, this room probably has 20 light bulbs in it, you know? This building probably has thousands of light bulbs. You know, IPv6, maybe we'll actually use it someday. As the volume grows, right, securing it will be even more trouble. I don't care if somebody, a hacker, gets in my light bulbs and turns my lights on and off, although I think it's actually happened, and it does drive me nuts. So, because my light bulbs are, I can do it. I can turn on my lights from right here from in Florida, which is sort of fun. So, but we can work on it. So I also see a day in the future where, you know, nowadays EMM, Enterprise Mobility Management, is really a hot subject, right? And we're seeing these, you know, whole management solutions for managing your mobile devices. So in the future, we're going to have like a light bulb management console. You know, all of it gets swept into System Center someday, you know. What happens in the world is real simple. You get these cottage little industries that go out there, okay, we're going to manage this, we're going to manage this. Like 10 different companies, startups, create some really innovative solutions. Microsoft buys one of them. Cisco buys one of them. Maybe Citrix isn't going to buy anymore. Then some other company, VMware, buys something, you know. And eventually, you know, the rest of them die off and the good stuff, you know, goes into the big companies. Then they go into System Center and we're all rejoiced. Much rejoicing, as Monty Python says. So that's the connected office in a way, is where everything's connected, you know, servers are popping up. So, but there are beyond the bulbs, you know, it's not just about light bulbs. So let me give you real quick, if I can figure this out. How am I doing on time? I have 10 minutes left? Cool. So real quick, this is sped up really fast. It's Microsoft's vision for the future of Internet of Things, and you can see really fast. Yeah, a person walks out of an airport, they look at their phones, things are just really cool. Everything you look at has data all over the place. It's just data, 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 right? And where you look in your mirror in the morning, there's data. You know, you look in, you're driving on the road and your windshield is data. You know, you're going across a street, and the street is telling you not, you know, like it's projected on the street where your directions are, right? It's just more and more data everywhere, big black slabs. So we call this the terminal world, and the terminal world is dominated with the black slab. We all have a black slab probably in our bag somewhere, right? And black slabs are great. They're very touchy and feely, and it's what we're really accustomed to, and it's a nice transition because it's what we're used to. It has lots of pixels, you know. Hey, we have more and more pixels. I think that's what Apple said. We made it thinner and we gave you more pixels. It's like, okay, man, come on. What's that?
That's innovation by Apple.
Yeah, exactly. I think they really need to start thinking of some more information. But I think that died about 2011, unfortunately. Advertisers love pixels, right? The more pixels go to Times Square, there's lots of pixels all over the place. Is this the world you want? With just data everywhere? Oh, I don't. It's called information overload. There's also another sort of world of Internet things called the robo world, RoboMan world, right? Where personal devices are worn on your body, wearables, you know, your watch, you know, that does all the things I've talked about. Google Glass, that was a success. you know, where, but they'll get it down. You know, they'll figure it out. You know, we'll have that. It just won't be creepy the way it was. You know, I tell you, Google Glass creeped me out. Did it not creep you guys out? Because it got too close to you. You know, it got too close to your, it's like, wait a second, don't film me. You know, you, this, I did not give you permission to do this, you know. So augmented reality, I do not understand augmented. My reality sort of goofed up to begin with. The last thing I want is augmented reality. But, you know, they're going in that direction. These big, oh, I just, please. Healthcare, right? Healthcare is huge where, with the robo world. Where we're able to give people really intelligent prosthetics, you know, and do things and make people, and especially people that are all going off to war and coming back all mangled up, and bringing them back to, you know, and really the bionic man, right? So the next world is robotics. It's heavy in manufacturing, where we're able to, you know, make some neat stuff and automate and in return drive down prices. Training, you know, where they're actually able to train you better through robotics and things. Interesting facts, humans love things with eyeballs. If you take something and just put eyeballs on it, we love it. We get warm and fuzzies by it. So try it. Just go to your office and put eyeballs on things. And you'll be like, oh, I really like this. You'll give it a name. So, but robotics can sort of get creepy. You ever see those Japanese robotics people that look like humans? And when you look at them, you're always creeped out, aren't you? You know what I'm talking about? You're like, whoa, I don't want that thing hanging out with me. You know, so we have, there's a warm and fuzzy is not human-like Japanese robotic thing. So, but the area I wanted to talk about with IoT that I really find very interesting is what we call the enchanted objects. And these are objects that are, well, they're enchanted. They're everyday objects that are connected with intelligence, right? So it breaks you from the chains of the black slab. We're not carrying these black slabs. We're taking the devices that we have and we're making them intelligent. It gives us the data or the information we want, right? Because we're addicted to information. We're not addicted to our black slabs. So where we need it, when we need it, and in a way we understand. And it avoids notification hell. If you saw that video I played, was notification hell. That's all there is to it. It was just like, oh my God, please help me. So the first one I want to talk about, I'll give you some examples of enchanted objects. 1 pixel, and we can get things down to 1 pixel, which is really cool. An ordinary object, an umbrella, right? It rains. You know, here in Europe, you walk places. So you leave your house, and you look, you're walking out the door, and you see this nice little umbrella with this little handle on it, and the handle's red. So you grab it and you walk out the door. You don't have to think. You don't have to look in your mirror. You don't have to turn on your TV. You don't have to look at your watch. You don't have to look at your phone. You just do your everyday task. You walk out the door. You see a yellow thing or a red thing. It tells you it's going to rain because it's red. We all know red is bad, you know, and we go outside, you know. What's that? Or the battery's empty. That's bleeping red. That's bleeping red. Yeah, that's actually, if the battery's empty, that's nothing. It's doing nothing. Okay, and how does this work? Well, it's really simple. It has a little microchip on there that sort of works like Amazon Whisper Sync, where it connects to the internet, doesn't use your Wi-Fi, just connects to the internet and to AccuWeather, and it checks out the weather in your neighborhood because it knows through GPS where you're located, and it tells you if the weather. And it simplifies it to 1 pixel, right? It notified you when you need it, where you need it, in a way that we understand, right? And then it confused the hell out of us and annoy us with all this information. Right? It's really neat. And at Synergy last year, a guy named Steve Greenberg, who's actually the guy that was arguing with me about the Internet Things killer app, did this great session where at GeekSpeak at Synergy, where he took a data center and he, you know, put his performance monitoring solutions and everything and connected it all together with IoT fabric, the OctaBlue fabric that Citrix bought, and simplified it down to 1 pixel and a little bit of smoke. Where, as their problems arose, he actually said, or this little cat here, the little, what is it, a Chinese or Japanese cat? The arm started swinging, the eyes turned from green to red, and it started blowing smoke, right? And then he's sitting at his desk working, he's like, okay, yeah, there's some problems. Oh my God, smoke's coming, I need to go do this. And what does that do? It gives us the first piece of information we need in the pyramid of knowledge, or the pyramid of question pyramid, where it doesn't need my attention. Should I do something, you know? And then, oh, I need to do something, cool, I'll dive in and get more information. But versus this giant screen of all this data that you're like, oh, I'll ignore all that, right? Because when you get too much information, you ignore it. The second cool little IoT device is a pin. So I really love this pin, and it's super cool. What it is, it's a pin. It's a normal pin. It feels like a pin, looks like a pin, writes like a pin because it is a pin, but it has a camera on it, and as you're writing, it records what you're writing because it's a camera, and it also records the audio, syncs that back in with the cloud, back into your network, right? And then it syncs the audio with the text, so when you go back, you can be like, oh, I want to, here's my notes, I want to hear what he said, so just click on it, boom, and up comes the presenter's voice. 5 minutes? Cool. So I'm not going to finish everything. I never will. I'll never get through this whole thing. And I even removed slides. Go figure. So that's okay, though. It gets boring at the end. So what are we doing? We're taking something as simple as a pen and we're giving intelligence, right? We're getting making our lives easier. And then we're able to go and take a session and be able to, oh, this is exactly what he meant, right? IoT gives us better, more personal experience, better decision making because we have more information. It leverages big data. More data increases intelligence, right? And then it gives us, if we're right, gives us the perfect experience at the moment we need it. Not three levels down, and not, you know, it gives us that, you know, like I said, the pyramid. So is IoT is the next big thing? IoT is new, but nobody in 2004, when I bought my first mobile phone and I stuck the ICA client on, I thought that the phone was going to change the world, right? I just looked at it and thought to myself, well, this is useless, but I love it, you know? So, and then, of course, things will get, you know, smaller, more specialized, like the umbrella and what have you. And really what's going to happen is two guys in a garage and using Kickstarter or something like that is going to really change the world in the ways we haven't seen yet through these type of technologies, through the thinking of, you know, not big and bigger, but smaller and smaller, more connected with more intelligence based on all this data that they're collecting. IoT does have risks. Every good has a bad. And the risk is, of course, hackers, everything's connected. The other big risk is automating our jobs away. So please be careful and don't automate your jobs away. I think as human beings, we have a responsibility to each other to not automate everyone's job away. You know, it sounds pretty cool, but we shouldn't do it. So we should have ethics, job loss, which I just talked about, laws, you know, get my glass away from me. We should, you know, tell our governments that, you know, we want to have some, still have privacy. And again, this is what I love about Germany is that you guys understand privacy. Last thing I want to talk about in what, like 2 minutes? 1 minute? 2 minutes. Cool. That's really all I need. Is mobility, because the mobility section is, it's a think mobile first. I'm standing here in Microsoft, and it's great to be in Microsoft because I'm a, I remember Microsoft when I was this little kid. And I was like, oh, Dad, buy Microsoft stock. Oh, that's a stupid idea, kid. I was right, and he's poor. No. So, something like that. Didn't get me anywhere. Well, it did give me. Anyway, so Microsoft, you know, a few years ago when they hired the new, brought in the new CEO, you know, what did he do? The first thing he said, we're a cloud company and we're a mobility company, right? No longer are we the old traditional way. We need to think mobility first. And this is the most important thing I can tell you guys too, or one of the most important. Think mobility first. You know, more users are coming online today than they ever have in the past that are mobile-only users. And through the consumerization of IT, these are our customers, right? Through the consumer of IT, these are our future employees. These millennial little, I don't have nice words to say about them, lazy kids, you know, they demand that they have Facebook access. I'd fire them all, but I wouldn't have any employees. You wouldn't want to work for me. I'm a mean, mean man. So, but we need to design our interfaces. We need to design our infrastructures. We need to understand all this new stuff that's coming online so we can build our networks to, you know, handle the additional traffic, right? And give them the experience, because the better their experience is, the more they want to work, which is, you know, better bottom line, right? And the very last thing I want to show you real quick, all those slides is exactly what I just talked about in like five slides, is a bridge. And I've always saw Citrix as the bridge to the future. It took legacy applications, mobile-fied, or, you know, put them in the, you know, made them mainframe applications and sent them out to the world on any place, any, you know, any device, anywhere, anytime, right? It's the greatest thing my eyes have ever seen, truly, besides pretty girls. But that's a whole different thing. And so as we move, you know, as Citrix, you know, is still completely Citrix remote desktop services, VMware, what have you. But when we bring these type of applications down to mobile devices, they start falling apart because they don't fit the form factor. They don't fit the experience. I have big fingers, although they're not that big, and clicking some of those things is a nightmare, right? Our applications are not designed for that. And when they're not designed for it, we run into giant issues, right? Users give up on it. Users don't have patience. They control the world, not us anymore. We can't force them to do things. So there's a great company called Hop2, which I want you guys to check out, hop2.com, that makes a really cool, and this is actually the screenshot of what's going to be coming out, hopefully by Synergy, which is the Hop2 receiver for Citrix. It works already for RDP, so if you're terminal services, you know, remote desktop users, it works right now. But it takes the interface, it doesn't change it, but you can add bars down here where you can just click and say accounts, and boom, and drive, you know, and dive four screens down, right? Also, when you click a text box, it zooms the text box and opens the keyboard. Just simple little things that make our life a heck of a lot easier, right? And if you've ever used, you know, the device on a you know, remote, especially terminal services, remote, you know, RDS apps on a iPad or Surface or what have you. I just want to shoot myself. I want to throw the device out the window and break it like this. And someday I'm going to do it. And it's going to cost me $1,000, and I don't want to do that. But with Hop2, it's wonderful. So in the very few future, you'll see exactly this, and a great little bar up there, which is all the stuff you're used to within the Seaver, but it's that mobile experience. It's just an easier, so what we can do, easier experience, better experience, and it'll work. So what you couldn't do before or was a pain in the butt, now it just works the way it should be, right? It's mobile-fied. Took those legacy apps and mobile-fied them. It's just a neat thing. So that's a summary. The world has changed before our eyes. You need to change how we think. You know, we need to understand these things. I'm done. Cool. So on that note, yeah, I'll leave you with the last thing, and that is when I was given my first job, I was given a ticket. They said, I will give you a ticket aboard a fast-moving train. It's up to you to stay on board. So this is what we're in, a fast-moving train. Have fun with it. So that's my talk.